I do not want to comment.
Je me suis donné toutes les réponses dont j'avais besoin.
C'est la Fashion Week.
Ils se mettent sur le trottoir, les fashion.
What are those? Dior clothes.
It's fashion art.
It is. Fashion is hard work, gritty, it's not glamorous.
Okay, you know now, les dés sont jetés. It means like, what can happen, you know?
That's all.
Hello, Jesse.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm so, so happy that you're here with us today.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. We've been harassing you to come.
I know.
We jump on you being here in Paris. Thanks a lot for taking the time. I know you're on a busy week. So the purpose of the podcast is to know you more, know about like the whole story. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us where you were born? And when, and a little bit of background from the early age.
Taking you back to the beginning.
Yes, yeah. That's
growing
what we want.
Growing up, me as a baby.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. I was talking to somebody recently, and we were having these conversations about what was the first memory that you had when you were a child, like your very, very first memory. You want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Yes.
My very first memory as a child was stealing coins, like change from my dad's piggy bank that was shaped like a Coke bottle, like very, very tall.
Lots of coins.
Yeah, lots and lots of coins. And I would stick my little hand. I was probably like 4 or 5. I would stick my hand and grab a bunch of change, and I would only take the quarters because I knew the quarters for
the big ones
for the ice cream machine. Mm-hmm. And then I would put the cap back on, and I would buy candy. And then I would put it in my little, you know, in your little, you have like a play place that you cook your food, mm-hmm. and you have your little
La
kitchenette.
Ginette, yeah, we call it in French.
Yeah. So I would buy this. I would buy gum. I would buy ice cream from the candy from the.
Oh my god!
From the ice cream machine, and then I would hide it in my kitchenette, you know, thinking it's going to be a refrigerator.
I can't imagine what happened to the ice cream then.
Right, right. And I would just steal bubble gum, and I was always stealing change, and I think that's funny that my first memory is like stealing.
Right, because you know, you remember because you know it was something like a little bit, you know,
it was
adventurous.
Naughty, yeah.
Well, yeah.
And I think I became like a klepto after that. It was just like stealing random
little
stuff
things.
Because, I don't know, it was fun, I guess.
So where was that? You grew up in Miami, right?
In Miami,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a funny place.
Yeah, like I grew up in Miami, and it's very different than here. It's very cold.
Yeah, everybody's cold in Paris this week. Spoiler alert.
I know, yeah, it's freezing here, but I grew up in Miami, and I went to elementary, middle, high school there, and I lived in Tampa for 2 years, and then I went back to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. How was it, like, cool, good student, like, because you're fucking smart, so...
It's, I don't think I was a great student. I was like a C student.
Okay.
No A, no B. I was just getting
random.
By.
Yeah.
Because you didn't like school, or you didn't feel comfortable there?
I didn't like it. No, I hated reading. I hated learning. I feel like because my dad was a handyman and he taught me to do so many more interesting things than, you know, reading a book in school and learning from the teachers, I felt like I was getting so much life experience from just, you know, putting light bulbs in and mowing the lawn. And I was more interested in stuff outside of school. So I didn't care that much about school.
Okay, so that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Because you're very handy. You're doing your own stuff at home.
I love it, yeah.
Okay.
Very organized, very... I think when I was younger, the way that I learned to do things was watch my dad and watch people do their job and just understand how they were doing something and take it apart in my brain, whether it was cooking something or changing the light bulb or fixing like the plumbing. I would just watch and say like, okay, he's doing this and then taking this out and then you can check and then you have to put it back and put it back. So for me, when I'm doing anything,
a lot of observation,
intelligence. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like a little sponge. So when there's something interesting, I'm like, I just want to absorb the knowledge and be able to do it myself. So I'm very interested in learning outside of like literature and school. So
okay.
I'm into very handy
things. Practical things.
Yeah. Street smarts.
I like that.
Street smart. We like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up very street smart, and I really didn't care that much about school. So I was a C student. And I was working since I was young, like mowing lawns with my dad. I was fixing things. I worked at the movie theaters. I worked at a bagel store. I worked in a retail store. I worked at American Apparel for a while.
And Hustler. Then,
yeah.
That's nice.
Anything. I was just trying to make money because I knew that money meant freedom. If I could make money, I could buy a phone. If I made money, I can buy new shoes. I could buy ice cream, whatever I wanted.
So not stealing from the jar anymore.
Yeah, I know. I know. I need to work for the money. Yeah, at one point I got caught stealing stuff and then I was like, I can't do it anymore.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Fashion-wise and style-wise, were you like a bit of a tomboy or were you always like very feminine and into fashion?
Very much a tomboy.
Right. Because I hear moaning, moaning, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I was a tomboy. Like? I think because I didn't grow up, I grew up kind of like a daddy's girl, so I didn't play with Barbies. I played with like trucks and dinosaurs and sounds really weird saying that now. But I was always into sports. I never did like ballet or gym or anything like that. So for me, I grew up like tomboy and dressed like a tomboy. And I really didn't care what people thought about me in school. And I had a lot of friends, but I didn't. I grew up in Miami, so a lot of Hispanic culture, and I grew up in public school, so mostly everybody was Hispanic in high school, and I was blonde, and I wanted to be like everybody else. I wanted to have brown hair. I wanted to speak Spanish. I wanted to wear Vans. I wanted to be like, you know, just kind of fit in like everybody else. And it's funny now seeing the world differently. Like everyone wants to be like me in a way because they're like, oh, it's, I don't know, it's like the American where you're blonde and blue eyes. And it's funny growing up like that, wanting to be like everybody else and kind of seeing it come full circle.
Yeah.
And like I dyed my hair brown. I went to cut my hair. I was just,
oh my God.
You know, a kid trying to fit in. And it was really fun not having an easy childhood in that sense. And my parents were always like, you need to work for what you have. And then I would work and I would buy a phone and then they would throw the phone away. And I'd buy another phone and then they'd throw the phone away. They're like, you can't have a phone yet. And I would always sneak and buy a new phone. It's when you had like the flip phone.
The flip phones,
yeah.
Of course.
And you know when you would buy the card of money to put on the phone so you can do a call and the texts were like 15 cents.
Yeah.
That was me. And I was getting my phone thrown away all the time. I was hiding it. I was like texting in the middle of the night and I was like sneaking downstairs and I knew my mom's password for the computer. So I would sneak in like the middle of the night and like reply to my Facebook friends. And anyways, that was me as a kid.
Very sneaky kid.
Very sneaky. But yeah, I ended up working a lot and I think I had very good work ethic from a young age. And I started... I had a job at American Apparel, so I was able to leave school early at the end of high school. So you would go to school from 9 a.m. to 11 o'clock, and then you could leave the rest of the day and you could go to work. So I only had a couple credits left to get in high school, and I ended up becoming friends with a bunch of college girls because, you know, I was leaving school early, I had nothing to do, and one of the girls came back to the dorm one day and we're just hanging out and she's like, I just made like $500 for showing my boobs. And like somebody just asked me on the street and I was like,
what?
Yeah. I was like, you made $500 showing your boobs? I make $500 in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like this is like fast, easy money. I'm like, how do I do it?
Oh my God. That was way
money
before.
Motivated me. I'm like, how do I make that much money that fast? And she's like, here's the guy's number. So I called him and he was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. I just want to make money.
It's crazy.
And he's like, have you ever watched porn before? And yeah, this is me going into adult industry now. I'm like, no, I've never watched porn. I've never given a blowjob before. I just never had zero experience. I had like a couple boyfriends, but it was like very, like base level. Yeah. You don't really know when you're younger, like to experiment like that. I think as a woman too, or a girl, you're just like, fucking, that's it. Like you just have sex and then there's like no foreplay and you don't really know what's
really
going
basic,
on then. So I had never really done anything before and I'd never watched porn. So I didn't really understand the industry or what what you need to do, what comes out of it, how it affects you in life. And I kind of went in blindly, but I didn't really care. I didn't think about the consequences of what would happen if I did it. And I think I was just in the mindset of wanting to make money. And because I knew money meant freedom, and then I could get my own place and I could move out. And when I was growing up in high school, you never got the chance to learn about being an entrepreneur or doing something outside of being a lawyer, a doctor, a scientist.
That's a shame.
And
it's worse than
France. A different era.
Totally different. And for the kids now, I'm like, they see this on social media. You can be a fashion designer, you can be a blogger, but I just didn't grow up with that mindset. And for me, I thought I was going to be a waiter and I was going to go to community college maybe and then just
not much perspectives in life.
I didn't even know about California really. I went to New York once with my family, and then I didn't even know like California and Los Angeles existed. It was just so just base level. It was before Instagram and before the internet really, so you just kind of knew your people around you. And so I had that mindset, like a very small, I guess, narrow mindset. And so then I started shooting. He was like, what do you want to do? And I ended up getting into porn, shooting a couple scenes in Miami. And then somebody put my Facebook with the scene. Somebody found the first scene I did. And I was still in high school. I was 18, but I was still in high
18,
school.
18, right?
Yeah. 18. And they found my Facebook and the scene, and they put it together and they put it on 4chan, which is it's kind of like a Reddit in a way, where you can just
that's the worst version of social, like it's not social media, but
It's kind of like
raw. It's like you can
you can put anything,
there's no limit. That's where everything comes from. It's like the bottom line of the internet, you know. Everything comes from 4chan and goes higher to everybody, you know. But it's always the starting point is always like back in the days. I don't know how it is now, but it was really the roots of the internet.
It's like when the internet came up, it was no man's land. It was just throwing stuff out there, and there was no rules and no somebody put my Facebook on there, and I wore the same dress from American Apparel to my homecoming dance that I wore in the scene, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to wear. So they immediately knew it was me.
There's no, that's someone who looks like me.
They knew. They knew.
And you were still living at your parents and everything, right?
I had moved out and I was still going to school. I had worked enough to save enough money. And then I ended up moving out, living with a roommate for a little bit. Which I was living with this random guy that I met for like 2 months. I was just like, I need to find any place to get out because I wanted to be on my own. So I wasn't told what to do, you know, like come home by this time, go do this at this time.
You were by your own, really.
Yeah. And I was really trying to just have my own independence. And my mom was like, go ahead. I don't need to take care of you. If you want to do it on your own, you can. So I lived with this guy and I was paying him rent, and he actually wasn't paying the rent. He was just taking the money. And then one time the people were like, you guys are going to get evicted.
Eviction,
and I was like, why? I've been paying the rent. And she's like, no, the guy who has the lease isn't actually paying the rent. So I ended up like finally making enough money, and I got my own place because I was shooting enough porn that I had enough money. But I thought that was really funny. I'm sure that happens to a lot of people.
So this reveal,
it was
how did
a lesson,
it go?
Yeah,
like the matching of, you know, like date night.
So everyone found out, and then the school found out because all the kids were talking about it. And then the school called my mom and they were like, we're withdrawing her from school.
Wow.
And they were like, she missed too many days of school. And I was like,
oh shit,
did I? Okay. And I was so close to graduating. And so I never graduated high school.
Okay.
My mom was always like,
me neither, though, so we're the same.
Yeah, look at us now.
Exactly.
Yeah, my mom was always like, just get your GED. Like, you'll need it one day. I'm like, mom, it's a piece of paper. Like, I'm going to do so much more. Like, even if you get a job now, high-end job, they're not like, where's your certificate for finishing high school? Where's your certificate for college? It's more about connections and life experiences that matter. So I ended up fully getting into porn, and I lived between LA and Miami for a year, and I was going back and forth for a month.
Because the porn industry is really based in LA, right?
Right. So
the big hub.
Studios and stuff.
Yeah. So the guy who ended up being my first kind of agent, mm-hmm. he was like, you know, if you want to take this really serious and build a career, because usually people will shoot a couple scenes, the girls will shoot a couple scenes and they're like, I don't want to do this. My parents disown me. Yeah. I want to go back. I regret it. And some people are like, I want to build my life and a career and really do this. So when you decide that, you have to go to Los Angeles, which is where the bigger companies are, the bigger productions. Mm. There's a lot of amateur porn and
it's an industry. It's a huge industry. People don't realize how huge it is. And like, it's funny because most of innovation in the internet comes like the VR, everything's like the high speed internet, the
all
streaming.
Innovation, they come from porn first.
Because they say that's the thing that people are willing to pay straight. They're no, okay, this is a premium service, but you're going to have this. They're going to pay so they can try. Because on other spectrum, people say, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm willing to pay for this, you know?
Very true.
Yeah. It's really serious.
So the bigger companies, if you want to shoot more, you kind of have to go to Los Angeles. So I was going back and forth for a year and I wasn't sure if I wanted to move. I didn't know anybody there. I didn't know what to expect. And so I ended up starting to shoot there and I moved after a year. And I had gotten another agent when I was going back and forth, somebody who's more serious in LA. And then I decided after a year, I was spending too much time going back and forth and I had a car in both places. I was like, I'm just wasting too much money. I should just move at this point. And there was nothing holding me back and keeping me in Miami. So I ended up moving, but before I moved, I had known about this agent. His name is Mark Spiegler, and he reps some of the biggest girls in the business, like Sasha Grey and Belladonna, Asakura. And I had known about him, but I knew he was picky with girls. He only takes 20, 25 girls at a time. Okay. He drug tests them. They're always on time. They're very well respected. Mm-hmm. Nobody tries to mess with them. Mm-hmm. And usually the girls are amazing performers and they do everything and they're the top of the business. So
contract girls, like?
Not contract.
Okay.
But he doesn't have a contract, but he's an agent. A contract girl is more for a singular company. So they only work for one company. And
they get an exclusive.
Yeah.
And that's
exclusive.
Huge amount of money too, or not specially?
Similar money as if you're working as a regular performer, but you just do less scenes. Okay. So less work, it's probably the same amount of money, but you lose a lot of control of your own life and you will never be as big because you can only work for one company and you don't get to interact with the industry. Yeah. Mm. So I called him and I was like, I'm moving to LA. I want to be with you. I want to be like a Spiegler girl. And everybody in the industry wants to be a Spiegler girl. He's like the best of the best.
Yeah.
And he's like, call me at 8 p.m. And I'm like, okay. So I call him at 8 p.m. He's like, you passed the first test. Okay. And I'm like, oh my God. He's like, now I know you can follow instructions and you can call on time. And I'm like, all right, first step. And he's like, so what's the deal? Do you have a contract with an agent? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, we don't do contracts and you would need to get out of your contract before you work with us. And he's like, I called a couple people that are respected in the industry and everybody likes you. Everyone's worked with you and they say good things. And he's like, usually our girls do everything. They do anal, DP, and they're working, you know, a lot and they're really rough and they're just really experienced performers. And I had only been in the industry for a year. And he was like, but you have a good reputation and I think that you could do some really big things. And so he's like, when you get to LA, come see me. And we'll work it out and we'll see what we can do. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, I found a lawyer and then I got out of my contract, which is really hard to do because really? Most girls get stuck in a contract for, five, 10 years. And then you never get out and you think it's so hard to leave and then you get discouraged and it's, you go into this spiral downwards where you can ruin your own career or an agent can ruin your own career if you don't want to be them. It's the same as the modeling industry.
Yeah, exactly the same. Always the same.
It's your livelihood and you don't want to leave because maybe you won't get work in the meantime and you haven't saved enough money and you're just scared. And it's, it's psychological a lot of the time and you have to be smart with your money and what you say to certain people and how you manage your own business. And it's the exact same as the modeling industry.
It's like your own business. Mm-hmm. Yourself is your own business, and you need to be everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, I drove from Miami. I took all my stuff in my truck with a trailer on the back.
No way.
And I drove to California. Yeah. It took me like 4 days. And on the fifth day, I had a shoot. So I was like, I have to get there on the fourth day so I can shoot on the fifth day.
You had a timeline.
Yeah. And then I went to see him and I was like, I'm out of my contract and I moved here. Mm. Like, I'm ready to work. And so I started working with him. He's incredible. We're still really good friends to this day.
Yeah, that's the guy you just put, that was at the AV and the other day. Yeah,
coming full circle like 10 years later.
It's crazy.
So I got into this world with him where you're working with companies that are already working with some of the biggest girls in the business. And it gave me almost a new level of, you know, when you go with a new agent, like an IMG or a lead, and then you have a whole different clientele.
Yeah, it was exactly that. They see you, even you're the same girls, like compared to models.
Right.
Because you're with that agency, it's like...
It means something.
Yeah, you're at your level.
Yeah, it means something. So when I started to work with him, I'm just... Wow. This is not a knot in my hair. when I started to work with him, I got to work with this new clientele, which when you're working for bigger companies in the porn industry, you're just on a different level where then you're performing to win awards. And, you know, when you're winning awards, you're making more money and you're becoming more valuable. Yeah, it's a game. It's the same as the models and same as like the acting. You win an Oscar and you're going to be able to charge more money. You win... a Golden Globe or Critics' Choice, you're going to be able to be in other movies and you don't even need to audition. So at this rate, I was like, wow, I have kind of my in to this whole different level and I have this opportunity. And he kind of pushed me in that way. And he was like, you know, you need to save your money. You can't do this forever. And he gave me the to be in the right headspace and the right guidance.
Very healthy.
Yeah, had a very healthy experience and I wasn't partying. I was still interacting with people, but I was treating it more like a job than
business.
It was more of a business than just like, you know, a lot of people on the outside think we're just like fucking all day and we're partying and we're doing it the next day and it's just like this rock and roll and sex lifestyle that never ends. But realistically, and there's so many lighthearted moments that people don't realize. We're cooking Thanksgiving together and we're going shopping and we're having a green juice and we're working out, but also we're on set and we're taking pictures and we're, you know, working with our friends, which is kind of weird. You know, if you and I knew each other on a personal level and then we had to go have sex, it's kind of like you have to put your head in another space. But it's kind of fun because you learn how to separate business from pleasure really quickly. And so I ended up shooting for this big company called Elegant Angel, and they were massive at the time. It was when Gonzo, which was just kind of like you put two people in a room and they fuck.
Yeah,
there's
no story,
nothing. Yeah. And they were some of the first to do this on like a very clean white background, beautiful mansion, and like just on a whole different level. Everybody wanted to work with them. Yeah. And people wanted to work with them because they didn't cut. It was like you take a couple pictures and that's it. And then you start the scene. Usually when you're doing a scene, you're like getting your makeup done. You have to do these pretty girl pictures. And then you have to go shoot like kind of the scene with the guy already and take the pictures. And like you're shooting and then you cut and then they position and then you cut. Mm-hmm. And like when you're a good performer, because some people need direction. See, there's like lights and you need to make sure you're open up to the lights and you're giving them like enough of this position and then you can go to the next position without being told. And when you're a good performer,
you feel things.
You already feel all of these things and you know where the camera is, you know where the lights are, and you're also in this intimate experience with the other partner.
Yeah.
And to be a good performer and not have to stop a scene, that's like...
the best experience.
And so that's what they were really good at, is putting mm-hmm. two amazing performers together that you can just let them go and just be a voyeur. And the directors would just follow, and everything was natural. And it was easy because you're shooting a scene for like 30, 40 minutes and then you're out.
Yeah.
Sometimes a day can be like 8-10 hours.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a huge difference.
So it's great money, easy. You work with the best performers, you get the best content out of it. And everybody wanted to work for Elegant at the time. And Spiegler was like, you got to meet one of our girls, Asa Akira. And she's like the biggest like Asian porn star. And she's still a friend of mine. She's incredible. And we became friends, and we would do like Barry's Bootcamp together and have like, you know, green juice. And we're really good friends with Spiegler, who's our agent. And at the time, he was like, you should do a scene with Asa for Elegant Angel. Like, she wants to work with you. And I think it would be a good idea. And they're down. They don't always work with new girls, but you know, I'm repping you. So this is an opportunity. So we ended up working together, which was awkward at first because we were like, do we kiss? This is kind of weird. We're friends. And then we got past it and we had an incredible scene. And then after that, they took me in to meet the owner who was running it at the time. And he was like, you did an incredible scene. Like, everybody's in awe. And we have this project that we've had in the pipeline for a couple years. And we haven't found somebody that we think could be the person to do it yet. And it was their first feature film, which was like a normal movie, but with sex. And they were not known for that because they were just shooting Gonzo. And they're like, we think you could be the person for it. Do you want to read it? Do you think you would want to do it? And so I ended up doing that movie with them. And it was the first movie that was shot in porn on a red camera.
Wow.
Like an incredible red camera. Mm. It was rigged. And for every
like
scene.
Movie.
Yeah, it was like a movie. Mm. Like, I was punching glass. We were fighting. It was just like, it was such an incredible experience for me at like, I think I was 19 at the time, to have the opportunity to work for such a big company and to have that platform then
elevate you again.
Yeah, to elevate me and to be in the first like feature film, really, that shot like a real movie, that was a real experience for somebody, not like, oh, we're going to the babysitter and they're gonna like fuck this person and that. It was like real moments with real feeling and different kind of emotion in a porn movie, where you see a lot of like sadness and you see a lot of intimate moments with like your family, and like you see a lot of abuse and you see a lot of BDSM, and you see it's just a very broad spectrum of stuff in a film that really had never been done before. So I ended up winning Best Actress, and we won Best Movie, we won Best Cinematography, Best Director, Best Screen, like everything, because people were just like,
tornado, like,
what is this? Yeah. Like, we'd never seen anything like this before. And after we won all those things, it kind of set this new standard for the industry, which was really nice for me to be like a pinnacle moment in time for the industry, because now it's more common to see features like this and performers that are really good actors. Mm. And yeah, it was really nice for me to do that. And then after that, I was like, what else am I going to do here?
Yeah.
Like, I did everything I wanted and I won all these awards. Like, what am I going to do? Keep shooting to try to win more awards. And I was just like, I feel like I have so much other stuff I wanted to do in my life. Yeah, I don't know why I'm going to keep, you know, trying to do the same thing over and over again. And I feel like it's good to let other people have those opportunities to step in and not, you know, take the space. So I just decided to shoot less, which was kind of the opposite of what happens when you win an award. You really want to shoot more because you can charge more and more people want you. And I think I went opposite in a weird way. I was shooting less, and then I started DJing. So then I started my DJ career.
Nice.
And I was making jewelry kind of at the same time. This was before Instagram still.
Oh.
I started a jewelry business.
How did that start it?
I had a friend who was making men's jewelry, and I was living downtown, and we would always walk past the jewelry district, and I would see a bracelet that I would like, and I'd be like, wow, I'd love that. And it was like $500. I'm like, this is just too expensive. Like, and he's like, oh, I can make it for super cheap for you. And so we ended up making it. And I was like, there must be so many more women that want this bracelet, not for $500. Mm-hmm. But back then there was not like the in-between of jewelry brands like there is now, like in the range of like $100 to $200-$300, it was like you're going to Claire's and buying like costume jewelry or Zara or whatever, and then you're going to Tiffany's or Cartier and you're buying high-end jewelry. So I think there was a niche in the market kind of when I was starting it that was like affordable but still quality and on trend, and that's kind of what I've kept since or till this day. When I make jewelry, I want it to be on trend, still quality, but I want it to be affordable because I like changing my jewelry, even though I'm not wearing jewelry right now. I like changing my jewelry, and there are some pieces that you inherit from like your mom or your grandma that you keep, your heirlooms or watches or pocket watches from your grandparents. But I think when you're buying your own jewelry, sometimes the style's changing so much now that you want to kind of keep on the trend. And
yeah, you did it like it was for you.
And exactly. So I was making jewelry very low key, and I didn't want to post about it because I was afraid that people were going to associate porn and my background, because it was still very stigmatized when I was doing it. Like, I never thought I was going to be able to work with Chanel, Vogue, Prada, like all these high-end companies. Mainstream companies. I never thought I was going to be able to do that. And I always had this fear, if I posted about my jewelry or people knew that I made it, they would associate me with it. And they'd be like, sorry, we're not going to work with you because you did porn. And, I just had that mindset. And so I didn't tell people it was me for a long time.
You just launched a brand like anonymously.
Yeah. And then I was just tweeting, on Twitter. I was just like, cool jewelry brand.
I wonder who's the owner.
No, but it was back then when people were not really starting brands like that. This was like 10 something years ago, where there was no Instagram yet. And you look at every brand now and you're like, oh, who's behind that? Like, what Instagram or whatever, like fashion house is behind that. So I just kept it really low key. And then I was DJing a lot. I was touring in Asia, and I played Le Carmen here many times. I DJed at Ultra Music Festival in Miami. I've DJed with Virgil. I've DJed with, I played a lot of house music. So like Claude Von Stroke and some just like icons that I'd always wanted to DJ with, I got to. And at that point, I was making jewelry and DJing at the same time and also shooting porn. So I was all over the place.
Oh, you were still doing porn at the time. Okay.
Yeah. And
a little less, but
a little less. Yeah. But at that point, when I started making enough money in jewelry and DJing that I didn't even need to shoot porn anymore, I almost had this new like revelation that if I was doing porn, I was doing it because I wanted to do it. It wasn't because I needed money to do it. So I was kind of enjoying it more, and I got to work with the people I wanted to work with and the projects I wanted to work with. So I refound this love for shooting that I never thought I would, because I knew it was always a job and I was doing it for money. But at that point, it kind of
you started like missing it. And
I started doing it because I wanted to do it. And then I
started a different time.
It's a totally different mindset to be in. And then I just got too busy making jewelry and DJing that I kind of phased out, but I'd still been going to the AVN Awards and just seeing my agent still and interacting with the girls. And
it's like the Oscars of porn.
Yeah, basically. Literally, yeah. AVN is the Oscars of porn. Thing.
All right. How did you get into DJing then? And did you use your like porn star name? Or was there any connection in between those two things or no?
Yeah, I had already built my name, as Jesse Andrews, and I thought, like, why change it? I already have a fan base people that know me. So I just kind of continued it. And it's like building a brand, like, why disassociate after a while?
You can kind of just keep it.
So yeah, I started DJing. I just had a bunch of friends that DJed, and I would literally watch them DJ and be like, I can do that
again.
It's coming again. Yeah. And the same with jewelry. I watched my friend and I was like, oh, that's easy. I can do that. So that's kind of how I've gotten into a lot of businesses, different career paths, is just seeing a niche in the market and then, leaning into whatever it is that I wanted to do. So I was making jewelry, DJing for a long time.
So what was the reaction when people, because as you were saying, on the jewelry and the other brand, you get so much like Vogue, like lots of fashion people that validate, you know, what you do. Like when you had the reveal, like how did it play, you know?
It was interesting because I had also started a swimwear brand a couple of years later and then a ready-to-wear. And eventually when I got enough press in Who What Wear and The Cut and all these brands, all these outlets that were talking about the jewelry brand, I was like, it's been in enough campaigns for people that I feel like it has its own life away from me. And porn was becoming not as stigmatized. Like Kim Kardashian was on the cover of Vogue and people were starting to work with girls and Vivienne Westwood had a gay porn star in her show and campaign. And I feel like in fashion, it was becoming more acceptable. And I feel like it already reached its own level where it had its own entity outside of me. So then I was like, it doesn't even matter if I tell people that it was me anymore. And I kind of just came out at one point and was like, yeah, I own all these brands. You know, my friends knew, but the public didn't really know. So I kind of just let it, you know, take its own path when people found out it was me. And then people wanted to do interviews and ask me why and kind of what we're talking about now, the stigma behind it. And yeah, it's my main job. As a jewelry maker, which people don't really realize. They just think I'm some influencer on Instagram now. But it still is my main job. And then,
because, sorry to cut you, there's so many girls, you know, coming from the industry and lots of them, I think, can do other stuff, you know, but like how you made the difference, you know, from some, because when I talk with my friend and I talk about you a lot, you know, to my no, I say, you know, there's so many girls in the industry, but like being the one who can, you know, make it away and like being like validated by all those people. And you know, the people from the fashion industry are really, really tough. They're really picky on who they let in, you know? So 100%. With your background, I understand that you had this mindset, because from that perspective, you know, oh no, they're never going to let me in. But it's the other way around now, which is crazy.
It's kind of fun to see everything become less stigmatized, you know, and the ideas of getting married and having kids or having a traditional job, like all of these traditional things that we thought were the way to live life. And even now with trans and gay coming into fashion, like it's so much more acceptable, and people need to change eventually, because if not, then we're going to live in a hostile world where, you know, there's so much hate.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's slowly coming to be like what it needs to be, and it's still going to take time. And even when I went to AVN, the AVN Awards a couple weeks ago, I was walking around with Spiegler, and everybody was like, because I had gone to a couple award shows and then I missed like a couple years and COVID and stuff, and people haven't seen me in so long, and you just see people from Instagram. And so I'm walking around with him and everyone's like, who's the new girl? I'm like,
I've been there.
I was like, it's Jessie. You don't remember me? It's me. I was like, it's Jessie. It's Jessie Andrews. And they're like, oh my God, like so good to see you. You look so good. And like, and I was meeting all these new girls who are like, you know,
millionaires.
Millionaires. And they're huge now. Like the girls in the industry, like their followings and their fan bases are just huge. And
one of the girls that you posted, like had the suggestion of a podcast she did, and she said that she hasn't done a movie in 2 years,
but she has Bella.
Like a brunette kind of girl.
Yeah, she's from Miami too.
And she said she never had so much money in her life, but she hasn't done movie in 2 years. I was like, what?
Yeah, because now you can do like a couple scenes and you can blow up. But she's also a contract girl for Brazzers. And she doesn't perform anymore, but she's still such a big, like, a name in the industry, mm-hmm. and she's just herself. She's studying to become a lawyer, which is incredible.
That's amazing.
And she was also rep by Spiegler, and it's fun to see. And my friend Asa also is a contract girl for Brazzers. Even though they don't perform for Brazzers, they're still kind of like the face
under
and the spokespeople.
Umbrella, like,
yeah, and they're and they can still make great money. It's different now in the industry, because when it went from when I was in, it was really heavy into DVD, and then it went into the internet,
digital.
Yeah, digital. And it was really hard for a long time for people to change their business from selling DVDs to doing a subscription model.
It's like the music industry. It's exactly the same business, the same models.
Regular mainstream films, it's the same. So it took companies a really long time. And I was in a really weird time in the industry where they were... We didn't really know what was going on. Like, internet was becoming a really big thing, but people didn't really know how to capitalize and market it. So there wasn't as much money, but now people have learned how to really, interact. And it's the same with Instagram. You see, before there was not sponsorships and ads, and then you saw it come, you know, they move marketing money from billboards to social media marketing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same with the industry now. And they're learning how to make money in so many different ways. And they know that social media is such a huge avenue for people to find porn or anything in general. So why not take these girls and pay them? Because, you know, girls at the end of the day were making $1,000 a scene, but now they can make $4,000 or $5,000 posting something on Instagram, bringing the traffic back. So it's kind of, it's really shifted this world in such a different way. When I was in, it wasn't even, I didn't even have Instagram. So I didn't see this come until later. When I was at AVN a couple of weeks ago, it's just fun to reconnect. It was really fun to reconnect with all of these older performers that I had worked with, and company owners and directors and PAs and photographers and just everybody in the industry. And they're like, we're so proud. And the new girls, like girls that I'd worked with and new girls, are just like, you really helped set a standard or be a good inspiration for girls to not only think that this is the one way to do things. And you've done so much stuff outside of porn. And it's just... I thought I was just living my life. I wasn't planning on being like this
entrepreneur,
this
model,
person.
Role model.
Yeah, I was just kind of like bored with everything I was doing, so I was trying new things. And to go back there and see all those people and hear that from these young girls who are massive performers now, making tons of money, and they have these huge fan bases, I was just like, this is so cute.
Getting back to the jewelry and the ready to wear and the swimwear brand. So you said you didn't have like this entrepreneur learning when you were younger, but like your brands are massive, you know, so it implies like shipping, like a lot.
Yeah.
It's brands. So how did you learn? Did you go back to school? Like
nothing. No, I learned it like it was, my brain is like a sponge though. So I just kind of learned everything I could from the internet. And when I first started my jewelry brand, I built my website. I was taking pictures with my iPhone on a wood table with like stuff that I had made. I had no shipping person, nothing. I didn't even have a customer service email for the first like 5 years I was doing business. I didn't even know what a customer service email was. It was back when like you buy something online and you don't know if it's going to come or not, but you hope so. It's like,
you're for the best.
Yeah, just, yeah. There's a chance you might not get it. And so when I started business, I literally had no idea. Like there was no Instagram. There was no rule book on a brand, but I knew how to print a label, make a label, package something together. And I kind of just learned along the way. And as business started to grow, I started to learn new things and, you know, how to organize your shipping really well and have certain days and then have a customer service email and keeping your production and doing design. So for me, I do everything from A to Z for the brand, and I have, you know, control. And I'm always like, oh, I'm spending an extra dollar here. I need to change this one thing. And like, it'll save me like 50 cents and here, and then reevaluate that in a couple years from now and be like, okay, this company, I'm going to change another company because they're not exactly what I want. And there's another company that can do more. Or
yeah, it's crazy,
like,
because
I remember
we had this discussion in LA a couple of years ago, and we were in the car and you were telling me, oh yeah, but like if I put this in the ads and it's going to cost me this, but I'm going
to... Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like business, oh my God,
yeah,
mind.
Marketing.
Yeah, really. It was like things I never, like I know people do, but you were telling me, I was like, okay, like she got it from, because I know that you design right. and everything. Say, okay, she's handling like 360.
Everything. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's important when you're first starting out your brand.
Sorry. No, you could also have partnered with someone who was like right. financial guy or, you know, right. like tech or marketing or operations or something like that. And you didn't. So,
yeah, but back then there was not really anything like that. And I didn't know anybody who had a brand or that was really doing business like that. So mm-hmm. I didn't even have the, I know a ton of people like that now, but I didn't have that, like accessibility, I guess mm-hmm. then. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn everything on my own. And I realized, when I started working with people like that, doing production or somebody doing shipping yeah. for me, they're not as good as they're at their job as they seem they are. And you have to be, as a business person, able to change and evolve with the brand. And if something's not working, you can't be afraid to take yourself switch. Out mm-hmm. of that. Yeah, mm-hmm. because I worked with a shipping company and I realized that they were disorganized. They were giving me wrong data. They were just not what I needed them to be. And one day I was just like, hey, I'm coming to pick up everything. And then mm-hmm. I had to decide, like, am I going to go to somebody else or am mm-hmm. I going to do this myself? And so now I run my own studio where we do like shipping and customer service, because I don't know if I want to give that responsibility. It's the livelihood of your business. Mm-hmm. Imagine like you give your stuff to a warehouse and they say, okay, we have 10 things of yours. And then in a couple months from now, actually we're sold out. We need more things. And then they just lost the box mm-hmm. of where your stuff is. And then when I came to get all my stuff from this warehouse, there were styles that were out of stock for like months and they were just giving me boxes of stuff. I'm like, where did this stuff come from? Like, you guys were just so, and it happens all the time because there's so much logistic that happens in e-commerce.
Logistic is super complicated, yeah.
So you have to have people that really care about your brand, because imagine you're working at a very big brand and you're just doing your job, but you don't actually care, you know, oh, okay, there's just an extra box. We'll just, you know, do something else with it. Mm-hmm. And then that problem continues to happen. It grows and then it starts affecting your business and you're losing money and you don't realize why you're losing money, and it can destroy a brand.
Gaining customers is so hard and losing them is so
easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I deal a lot with, you know, shipping online because we don't have retail. I owned an art gallery for a year where we did a show with Hugo. Yeah. We worked with Bulgari, Floss Lighting, and some amazing artists that I really loved. And that was like another part of my life, which was having an art gallery.
Yeah, but tell the story about like how you built the gallery, because these girls say, oh, working downtown, say, yeah, I'm going to do a gallery. She showed me pictures like the place is something, but like... And I saw videos of her like doing garden stuff, doing like, and now it's
construction.
Just, yeah.
I mean, anything interesting, I'm interested in. Mm. And well, I wanted to open a store because the jewelry business was doing really good. And I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, in my mind, the next step is to open a retail store. And I started looking at spaces, and they were so expensive in LA. And then I saw this space. And they were like, you can rent it, but we're trying to sell it, so you might not be able to get a long lease. And I was like, well, let me just rent it. And I kept being like, let me rent it. I'm ready to rent it. And I was ready to take on like, you know, a $10,000 rent. But, you know, I knew I could make it back if I did enough stuff there and I sold enough jewelry, and I knew the business could handle it. And eventually the guy was like, look, like, we're still trying to sell it. You know, we don't want to lease it out. We want to have it empty in case somebody buys it and they want to have it as their space. And so I talked to my friend who was a real estate agent, and she's like, well, maybe we can just put in an offer. Maybe you can get a loan or something. And I was like, I don't know. I've never bought anything before, but I have a bunch of money saved, and I think this could maybe be cool. So I ended up buying the property, which was on Melrose, near Melrose Place in LA. It's like a very cool street, but it was a quiet, it was across from Vivian Westwood in LA. So a very cool street, but still quiet. And I had this vision for it to become this space for jewelry. And as I was making it, as I started renovating, COVID happened. And I was like, fuck, it sat empty for months and months. And I had this idea to make it more of a communal space. So my love for art and my love for bringing people together and design. And I love the art world and I love galleries, but I feel like there's a very dark side to it.
And in which way?
In the way that sometimes gallerists like use artists and, you know, make a lot of money off of them and kind of treat them like a
product,
like a pawn in a chess game. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me, I know so many artists and so many amazing brand owners that deserve more than that and have worked really hard for their craft, and that I also I see that in myself, and I always wish that I could have had this kind of opportunity if I can supply a space to let somebody who cares so much about their craft use it just as a platform to do whatever they wanted to do. So I ended up opening an art gallery, but we did a lot of different things there. We worked with photographers, we worked with lighting companies, furniture brands, painters, just kind of everything. And it became more of an experimental project for me. And I learned so much about myself and what I really liked to do, which was construction and design. interior design, and also bringing people together. And for me, all we have in this world is really our relationships with people and our emotions, and everything else is material. So
true.
If you have good relationships with people, then you can make anything happen. So I ended up doing all these things. And, you know, even with Hugo, I was just like, here's the space, do what you want with it. If you make money, then you make money. It's yours. And if you want to give me something, you can give me something. If you don't, I just want to supply this space and my network of people and the following and everything to you to support you as an artist, because there's a lot of people in the world who don't want to do that. They want to make money off the artist. So I kind of just let that have its own turn of life. And, you know, at the end of the day, after a year of that, I was like, this is not for me. It's a lot of work for what it's worth. And then I end up selling the property for way more than I bought it for. So it kind of weirdly came back to me in a different karma that like, I didn't need to make money off of the art and stuff that we were selling there. Mm-hmm. The jewelry business had a great hub and I had a great time bringing people together. But then when it all came full circle, I was able to make money in like a totally different way that I'd never realized. So then I was like obsessed with buying real estate. So I was like, I'm going to buy real estate.
So now she's buying everywhere. She bought in New York.
I have my house in LA and New York. I would love to buy an apartment in France. That would be great. So my life has taken a lot of weird turns. And I feel like everyone always asks me, how do you do so many things and they're successful and you're kind of back and forth? Like, how do you have time to sleep? How do you keep it all organized? And I've just been telling people lately, it's something that I talked about a lot lately, is when I was doing like a meditation and I was being guided through it, and they're like, okay, close your eyes and just let your mind be quiet and not think about anything. And they're like, if you have a thought, don't try to stop it. Mm-hmm. Just follow your thought through until it ends and then let it be. And for me, it's the same. Weirdly, I had this like revelation when I was in this meditation that this is really how I do things. It's like I have this idea for something and I lean into it and I let it go for as long as I feel like it needs to be. And then I let it go. And there's no feeling or ego of me being like, if I stop this, it's a failure. If I stop this, what are people going to think? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, what happened to the art gallery? You put so much into art gallery. I'm like, I did the art gallery for a year. And
it was a success.
And it was good. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. I had so much stuff, other stuff that I wanted to do. And the same with like, I started a sunscreen brand that was the same way. And sometimes ready to wear, like, I just don't want to make it for years. And then I don't think it's a failure because I'm not continuously building this thing yet. And same with DJing, same with porn. Like these were just chapters in my life that have opened and closed. But you can never not go back and read the book at some point. So the chapter kind of opens where you flip in, and that's it's kind of where I am in my life now. Everything coming full circle, and the jobs and stuff that I have now are just interesting. So I'm you know, doing like a lot of acting and
yeah, we're gonna talk about
writing.
The acting, but like also
the next chapter.
no, but it's true that the last year you've been heavy on the fashion side. You've mm-hmm. been invited everywhere, mm-hmm. Lot of shoots, lot of covers, mm-hmm. Lots of events. You're invited in France. You've been traveling a lot to come here.
Yeah,
like it's really fashion embraced. You were right. And how did you take
weirdly.
It? Like, how are you doing it now?
I think relationships, like how we met through friends and building relationships with people is very important, and spending time with them, because you guys know, like you go around Fashion Week and you're hugging, you're saying, hi, I will hang out, da da da. But if you really put the effort in to build personal relationships with people, is the most important thing. And I think everybody wants to be reached out to and talked to, even if they don't want to reply. I feel like people love to be wanted, whether you're an editor, a brand owner, a fan, whatever it is. People want interaction, because that's all we have. And so for me, I think I was able to build a lot of great relationships over time by having that mindset of, you know, having coffee with people and learning about their lives, and not only my, I know this podcast is about me and I would ask you guys a million questions, but you're like, no, we need
everybody
to hear about your life.
Everybody wants to ask us questions.
Yeah, I could ask you a million questions, but I think being curious is one of the most important things in life, and not only thinking about yourself, but thinking about other people, and not trying to have, not expect something in return.
You know what? That was I was about to say about you. You're such a giver. You just give.
Like, if I can do it
organically, you know, and just you've been so nice. Every people that I know, how you've been with me, but how you've been with other people that I know, like always kind, always, you know, this little thing. No, but it's true. It's true. I have to say it, you know?
Yeah. And I think caring about people is important. Yeah. And when you're kind to people, you kind of get that kindness back. It's really hard to be mean 100%. To somebody that you're kind to. So I think like the more I can be that way and be a joy to be around, and just the whatever platform I have, I just want to help people and connect people. And I feel like even if we meet now, I could think somebody is good for your podcast and I could recommend them to you, and then something comes out of that, and everything kind of just is in one degree of separation already. So I think if you can make a connection somehow, it's important to do. So I think fashion for me, it's an interesting world. France is way different than New York and LA and Copenhagen and London and Milan, and all these markets are so different, but if you can find your place and your people in each of them, then everything's in one degree of separation. If you know this person, they know this person. Yeah. You come to this dinner, you're gonna end up knowing everybody eventually anyways. And you know, why walk into a room where like you don't want to see somebody there? Or, you know, if you have like a bad attitude towards someone or something, I feel like it's always good to resolve things, because we're going to see each other and people are going to talk. And I think it's better to just say how you feel and be able to be honest with people. And that's, as I've gotten older, one of the hardest things to do is to have difficult conversations with people, because they're uncomfortable, and you could say something to somebody and them take it a completely different way. And then your ego is going to be hurt because you put yourself out there. But I think the people that are worth being in your life and building relationships with are ones that can also have these difficult conversations. And it happens with relationships and jobs and friends. And it's just a very hard trait to learn. But if you can master having difficult conversations with people, next time. There's a really good book called Difficult Conversations that is all about how to talk to people, and it's more of like learning their side of the story, because everybody has a different perspective, and you've had stuff happen in your life that I have no idea about. And maybe that's why you react a certain way to something. Like a car crash can happen and you can run to get it, and I might stand there in shock, and neither of us is right or wrong. It's just experiences in our life that have shaped the way that we react to things. And I think you have to take that into consideration with experience, like, you know, daily life experiences. And Yeah, that's my lesson.
Dropping a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think we need that. There's not...
And wisdom.
Yeah, wisdom. Yeah, me at 30, I'm like, here's the wisdom.
Yeah, but you've
wait
done
for
so
the 40.
Much.
Wait for the 48. It's
I
another
know,
level.
Right? I like can't wait. Yeah, I can't wait to like live life and get older and have more experiences. Right. And I'm just excited about so much random stuff. Yeah.
Okay, let's get into the acting stuff.
Oh,
so
acting.
Last year you had the big euphoria moment.
Yeah, big euphoria moment. I had not done really any mainstream before that. I did this movie with Timothée Chalamet and Will Fichtner and Elijah Benham, who wrote this movie, Hot Summer Nights, and he's a blacklist writer. And then they ended up shooting this movie, and they were shooting like a reshoot in LA, and I had a guy knew me from an interview I did with Vice magazine, and he was like, we should get her. So they called Spiegler, my agent. Mm-hmm. I was already out of stuff. I was just doing so many different things. He's like, they want you to do in this movie. And I was like, well, how much are they going to pay me? And he's like, it's like, you know, $500 for the day. And I was like, it's not worth my time. I'm not going to do it. And he's like, you should just do it. Like, they're up and coming actors. That's how he talks. He's like, they're up and coming actors. Like, you should just do it. And I was like, oh, like, I know he's always right in a weird way. And I'm like, fine. Like, how long do I need to be on set? I was really like, you know, picky. They're like, yeah, you need to do your own makeup and this and that. And I was like, oh, like, really? He wasn't making it easy for me. But I ended up doing it, and I met so many people, and I had so many great experiences that I was like, oh, thank God I did it. And I listened to him. So that was really my first mainstream moment. And this was before he did Call Me By Your Name and all these big films. And then the other actors also went on to do great things. So it was really fun to be part of a film like that. That was a coming of age and before everybody got to where they are now. And then I did that episode of Euphoria, which it won for that episode. It won like best drama. So, yeah.
That episode was
so intense.
Yeah. She runs the whole episode like the episode. It's a movie by itself, you know.
And I didn't know what that episode was about. I only knew what my scene was in the movie in the TV show. And I didn't really know where it was going to be placed in the season. And I was like, I'll just do it because Sam messaged me the day before and was like, do you want to be in the scene tomorrow? And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. So I went and our scene was shot. And then when I watched the episode, I was at my house. Everyone's like, oh, you're going to be in the season. Like, we got to watch it together. It's going to be so cool. So there was like 30 people in my living room. And I was like, oh, I think we're just going to watch like the five minutes or like the clip or whatever. So I ordered pizza and I got really high because I don't know why. I was just like, people were smoking. I was like, yeah, I'm going to smoke some of this. And so I'm there and I was like, yeah, let's just watch the clip. And everybody's like, no, we want to watch the whole episode. And I was like, I'm not ready for that. And then we started watching the episode and it was so intense. Yeah. And I was just sitting there like, zoning out, and I didn't know when my part of the thing was, and I was like, what the fuck is this episode? And everybody was just like, this is really, really intense, and it's just 30 of us in a room eating pizza, and all my friends were just like, oh my God. And then I came on and they were like, woo, and I was like, oh wow, I didn't expect to watch this entire episode with 30 people like watching her go into this like spiral downwards. So that was really fun. And
but when you acted and when you got that nomination and did that like major movie, that was a shift for you. It never really planted a seed in you that you were like, oh, I actually like acting, not just porn, but like acting, and I'm going to go into that and pursue that.
I was not that I was trying to remove myself from porn and anything that had to do with like acting or film. I just was like, there's so much other stuff I want to do. And you know, when Sasha Grey was big, she ended up doing The Girlfriend Experience and Entourage and all these things. And most porn stars do. They go straight into film because it's quite easy and it's natural. And a lot of people that are movie making, they want to use girls like that. So they kind of just slot them into a movie. And I kind of went opposite. And then everything for me weirdly comes like full circle. So I ended up doing these things. And last year I shot a movie called Love Bomb. And it should come out like hopefully April, May, June this year. And it'll go to like festival. And it was my first time playing a female lead in an actual movie, which is, that's pretty serious for me. And
of course,
I was really excited that I got the opportunity to do that. And it really opened my eyes into like the film industry and wanting to be on film more and make, just create more within the movie industry, because I feel like there's some way I can make a difference somehow, because every industry I go into, I'm really trying to create some type of niche or do something different and to inspire some other things to happen, because I feel like I've done that with porn and been able to show girls that they can do stuff outside of porn. And same with DJing. Like, there wasn't a ton of female DJs back in the day, but I kind of think that I opened up a different world for them, and similar to fashion too, and just being able to be myself and people be accepting of me, I think helps other people be accepting of themselves and other people. So
yeah, to be honest, you know, last fashion week there was Mia Khalifa here, and she's you see that she's trying to get into the fashion. Yeah, I was like, okay, I see the pattern here.
It's kind of cool. Yeah,
yeah, and, of course.
And I don't think anything badly of it. I think everybody has their own way of doing things, and I'm so happy for them.
I think you open doors.
Yeah, because back then you couldn't imagine, like, you know, a porn star working with like Vogue or working with Chanel and all these like huge brands, where now it's kind of cool. I wish it was this cool when I was in, because I wouldn't have had to work so hard. But
but you paved the way.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I look back at it now, like I was just living my life, trying to make it, trying to take over the world, and along the way. Yeah, I have so much stuff I still want to do. And now in TV and film, what's next?
a little spoiler.
Yeah, some spoilers of my life now. Yeah, you're getting the your first detail. I mean, I talk about it with everybody that I know, but I feel like publicly I haven't really talked about it. But I'm going to shoot, I wrote a movie. It's an American-French movie. And we're going to be shooting here in the middle of the year, probably June or July. And it's like a psychosexual thriller. And it was my first time writing something myself, and it's a whole different thing that because I hate reading and I hate writing. I really hated school, but I love learning. So I think you can have both of those things go hand in hand. And I was kind of scared in the beginning, and I was auditioning for a couple like a lot of things, and I was like, I don't want to read for this movie. I don't think it's right for me. These are not roles that I want to play in, and a lot of big roles already go to very specific people. And so I was thinking, you know, if I want to be in something, what world do I imagine myself in, and how can I create this world and live in it? And that's kind of what I've done with a lot of other businesses.
Yeah, like the jewelry. You said, okay, I'm going to do something that I would buy in my price range, and that you know, it's the same.
So I kind of decided to create this world, and I was really scared in the beginning of, and it was my first time really hesitating to do something, because I felt like there are so many amazing writers, and I watched so many movies and TV shows that I'm like, wow, this is incredible, and it must take so long to do, and these worlds and the imagination that people have when they're writing and seeing people talk. I was just scared. I just didn't know how to structure anything, how to write a movie. And, you know, I forgot that there was Google, and then I just Googled how to write a movie. So I Googled how to write a movie, and I learned like how to structure things and what's important to add in. And then once I started, you know, getting into it and writing like a beat sheet of like moments that happen within the film, and the reason I wanted to make the film and the characters in it, I started just like seeing this world come alive. And that's what I've done with other brands of mine, you know, seeing a vision for the identity of the brand. And when I do creative for other people and marketing, I kind of see it as a big picture, and then I go dive into the different avenues, like the smaller avenues, whether it's like writing, casting, DP, all the other stuff that goes in it. I had to see the bigger picture first. And once I started learning how to structure something, I felt like I had the tools to be able to write something, or at least try to write something. And what I realized is it's the same as what we were talking about before, like the idea of getting married, having kids, being a lawyer, being a doctor, everything that was taught to us on how to live life and do things the right way doesn't really need to be that way anymore. And I kind of took that into writing, and I'm like, it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be from me and my perspective. And everybody has a different perspective, whether, and it goes back to, you know, the car accident, like you could run and I could stay frozen. And the way that we write and function in our daily lives is because of the experiences that we've had. So I'm going to write from an experience that I had in another part of my life, and because of this and that, and it's going to be totally different from you, and neither of us are right or wrong. It's just how we see things. And I realized then that my voice is unique because of the experiences I've had in my life. So to write something from my perspective and have people read it, it's just, it feels unique. Because it's coming from somebody who didn't go to school for writing and doesn't sit in a room all day and like only think about writing. It comes from somebody who's been living life and been in this world that maybe they're creating. And I think everybody should write or make music or draw or express creativity, because it's just so unique. And a lot of people can design the same things and have the same taste, but it's all coming from your personal experiences, and that's really what will make it different. So I'm doing that.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then I'm writing a TV show about my old porn agent's life. So my whole life is coming like full circle.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is cool.
It's kind of cool. And I think for me to do the industry justice, because he's such an important person in my life, and he's just so interesting, and he's so respected, and he's just so cool. I feel like I really need to do him justice and the industry justice, because we always see it from such a singular perspective, where it's in a Boogie Nights, or it's in Pleasures, or in a movie where it's a moment in time, and you see these people having most of the time a negative experience. And I feel like there's so many times where I had so much fun, and like you need to kind of see both sides of things, and people really only see one side. So I think my duty with this show is to show perspectives from everybody, from a director, from a model, from a PA, from a fan, from a boyfriend, from
the industry point of view.
Yeah, an industry point of view, because most of the time it's outsiders looking in. And for me, being there, having the experiences and knowing what really happens, I write and I see from a totally different perspective that I think is unique and weirdly like invaluable, because most people that write films about the porn industry are outsiders.
With fashion.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, when I read stuff or I see movies about the fashion industry, it's always, like you said, people outside looking in, you know?
Right, right. And I think, yeah, you're going to write something one day, I'm sure.
It's written already.
So that's what I'm up to. Just, you know.
Incredible.
Wow.
So
incredible
much
story.
Hi. Thanks, guys.
Jaycee, thanks a lot.
I know, I'm like, that was my story at the end.
I'm going to go like,
thank you so much. So inspiring.
Yeah.
Thanks for the time. Thanks for all the good advice.
Anytime. Next time I come on, I'm going to have a whole like six more chapters of my life.
Yes.
In like
do.
2 years from now.
There will be a part two.
Yeah, there will be. There honestly will be a part two. I already know it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.